grain of rice, and a grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
Hi, folks. We're just looking at our new intro here. Very fancy stuff, lads. Technology moving on all the time, like. What do you think?
I keep telling you, Dale, technology is the way to go, Dale. You don't believe me, but it is.
You sent me a text there last week. Or you put it up on the group one there that you were scanning mayors. Tell you, boy.
That's right.
When I knew you had done mayors, you were scanning more. Don't run past the street. How are you all, folks?
Good out there.
Yeah, delighted to be joined today. Great to have you back, Brian Hogan. Hoagie, how are things?
Good, hello. Good. As I said to you before, we went on. Surviving.
Yeah, Janie Mac. It's still queer times for GAA people. Although today, I suppose, being the first day of the measures being changed around a little bit, so a bit of hope you can drive to Lahinch today now and go for a swim if you want. No, you can. Yeah. Brian or TJ can't, but Mark can drive down to y'all there now and throw himself in, like, and instead of scanning you can bring the horses to the sea as well now, can't you?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. While the amenities down here now in East Cork, Anthony, and maybe West Waterford as well, but that would be outside the 5 kilometres, like.
After her sublime victory at the weekend, Mark, on Friday evening, just while we're on it now, we might as well kick on. How is Getaway Queen?
The Queen.
Big win over Wexford.
The darling of the podcast, is it?
Yeah,
TJ Ryan blew the cover on about 3 months ago. The first time she'd be off, she'd hack up.
Yeah, well, he told us all, like, watch for her in a handicap hurdle, 2 miles, good ground. And then we all looked at the entries on Thursday night and said, Ginny, what's the story with Landers? What's the story with the Queen? And so we sent on the text, you know, what was the story like? It's a good thing we have the text on the phone, actually, to show our friends that we weren't just making it up, like.
Oh, Jenny, I tell you, she ran well, in fairness. So she surprised a lot of us, to be honest, not alone. She surprised me. She surprised the trainer as well, how well she went. So, yeah, but not to get our head in front now.
Yeah, not everybody in the country was surprised, Amak, we'd have to say. I mean, she went from 9-1 into 4-1. Particularly, she came from sevens to fours in the last 15 minutes before the race started. Whatever happened?
I don't know. I'd say the podcast, you have a couple of snaky fellas behind your Twitter there. I'd say every one of them had the tenors and a few quid more, I'd say, on her. But it certainly wasn't any of mine, Dela. I've the money in the bank at this stage.
Yeah, you don't part with it too handy, I will say that. Like, TJ, you weren't in shock at all, TJ.
No, I wasn't in shock. I could clearly see the handicap rating of 87, where she was rated 56 in the flat. It looked to me that she had a stone in hand over hurdles. But like yourself, Delo, when I saw the message that not today, I did think that the handbrake was on. And I thought that we would be all in down the road in maybe a month or 6 weeks' time. But as like you said, somebody was on her. I actually was on my way home from Morton College. My mother and father was at 5-6 on Friday evening. And I told my father, I said, this horse is running here, Landers' horse is running. And he goes to me, he's going to win. And I said, no, not today. And then he says to me, Jesus, that's plenty of money for him. And I said, sure enough, there was Sean Flanagan tanking around, looking good. And that one with plenty to spare. What I would be curious to see is what kind of a penalty she gets. Because if she only gets probably £4 or £5, the next day she runs, if the ground is right over 2 miles, she'll still have a little bit up her sleeve. It's been a good plot job by Landers.
Yeah, you'd have to say that, TJ. Just from my own point of view, like, having not got the don't back or stuff in the morning, as I would do with entry on everything, I did a little Yankee, little €4 Yankee. That was going to be my interest for the day. Two winners up and a defeated one going down on the Queen at 7-1.
Lovely
little docket now, TJ. So I said, I better check with the owner who told me cash in that docket fast. I'll tell you. Not long did I cash in the docket, but I backed the favourite in the racing as well. The getaway queen flies past the favourite.
As my mother said long time ago, Dela, she said, fools and their money are soon parted.
Yeah. I think the best way to leave it, Dela, here, right, is since that has now happened and it's history, that Landers owes us one. Would that be fair?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, in fairness, TJ, one of my favourite weekends of the year, entry, obviously being at the Grand National a few times, to go, what a spectacle. And for anyone that goes over, what a spectacle there on the Friday as well, if it's opened up next year. With ladies there in entry, it's a fair spectacle there on the Friday as well. But the Masters in the golf from Augusta, and you know, it's a brilliant weekend. Premier League back from the international break as well. We Jose Mourinho and Ole Solskjaer fighting over feeding the child before he went to bed and everything like that. But it's a fantastic weekend, and like, it's the story really of two people, I suppose, in that Hideki Matsuyama, first Japanese man to win a major in golf, and they're huge into their golf. And then I suppose the story already of the year, but to cap it all, the first lady rider to win the Grand National. What a story, Rachel Blackmore. So much talk. You're nearly afraid to talk about it now because someone comes back attacking you that you said, why you mentioned that she was a lady jockey? You know, she's a brilliant, she's exactly, just a brilliant jockey, like, isn't she? What a story, Dermot.
I would like, leading on from, I suppose, Cheltenham, where she was the leading rider at Cheltenham with six winners across the board, and having fallen off six horses as well in the course of all the races in Cheltenham. What a fantastic woman to get back up and ride so many winners. But like to win, be the first lady rider ever to win the Grand National was superb. And I liked what she said, actually, when she came in the interview. She said, look, I'm not a woman, I'm not a man today. I'm just a human being that is lucky enough to have ridden the winner of the Grand National. So, and there's a lot of people, you're right, there's a lot of people who will be driving it in that is this, that, if we say, from a female point of view. But it's not. It's about her horsemanship. And she's an excellent horseman. And I'd have to say she gave it a superb ride. And then the owners involved as well with JP. You know, it was a great pickup for JP and the family, Noreen and all their family. I think to win the Grand National, I think an awful lot of people out there that are involved in National Hunt. And I would also make the point that National Hunt Racing and GAA are definitely intertwined, Anthony, across whatever county you're from. There's a huge, broad spectrum of people that are involved. I go to Galway every year, going for the last 18 years, with two lads from Kerry Tool, Tom and Thomas O'Brien, and we meet the likes of Glenn Ryan and Eddie McCormack and a couple of lads, Aidan McCormack from Donegal and lads from Kildare, and all around we meet Sheedy and Dignan as well from a Holland point of view. So there's a huge amount of people involved in all the, you know, the GAA and the racing. But I'd have to say that the Rachel Blackmore story is just phenomenal, like, you know, and she's a really, really brilliant talent. And it has capped her season, I would say, following on from winning the top jockey in Cheltenham.
And Hoagie, do you have a five each way on the National?
Would you believe it? I actually did. And I wouldn't be as au fait with the racing as the lads would be. But you're like, I suppose, like a lot of people who maybe, you know, dip in and out, you know, once a year. It's like Cheltenham or, you know, the Grand National, whatever. You throw a punt at an old horse, and we all had a few quid on it in the house and different horses just for a bit of crack. I backed Hogan's Height. So you can see the signs that went into picking that one, and
Hogan under the dropping ball.
I didn't spend long checking the form on that one. I think it's still out. I didn't hear the name once from when it started anyway, so I was tearing the jacket up halfway through. So but look, sure, it's a bit of crack, you know, and there's a right old bit of banter inside. But yeah, look, I mean, I think Mark has said it all there in terms of Rachel Blackmore's performance and just the year she's after having. And like, I suppose the great thing is that it transcends gender, you know, the race, and it's purely your ability, your ability to, or your horsemanship, as Mark has said. So it's just incredible. Like, and the way she's, and again, I wouldn't be that close, but I would have listened to like AP McCoy and different people talking about her just as, I suppose, as a jockey and as a person. And she seems to be a serious person.
Yeah, you'd never actually think she's 31 from the interviews, would you? She's 31 years old. Like, she looks so young, right. And I suppose she's so slight and everything. Great article today, Tej, from Ruby in the paper, where he kind of said, like, you know, would he have advised the 25-year-old Rachel Blackmore that he barely knew to turn pro, 6 years ago? But he balanced the article by saying, like, it was a lesson in life for anybody, like, that she had desperate, tough seasons, couldn't get winners, stayed at it, got stronger, worked on our weaknesses. Like it's like a hurler, like isn't it, coming out having not played County Minor. We spoke about that. Like, so, you know, fellas like that, Bernard Brogan, Brian Lohan, Henry didn't play minor, I don't think, did he, Brian?
No, myself and Future, yeah.
You know, like that club, but they wanted it, and it looks like Rachel Backmore, TJ, all those attributes, and it comes across when she's interviewed as well.
Yeah, it's a brilliant story, Dello. And look, me being a keen National Hunt follower, I followed this story like right from the start here. Like go back to even last year, Mark, in the Mayor's Hurl in Cheltenham, the ride you gave Honeysuckle up the inside to kind of scoot past Paul Town. This community is unbelievable. So, look, being to Cheltenham a number of years, like an awful lot of the National Hunt supporters kind of latch on to kind of a jockey and kind of just get into that fan club. And Ruby had it for years. And it looks like as if Rachel is going to replace Ruby, which is an unbelievable statement to make, yeah? But just an incredible jockey and an incredible story. Very difficult to break into the horse racing game, not being from a family entrenched in it to try and come, because like it is very much a sport of kings. Like the likes of, let's say, Ruby or the Carberries or any of the other people who've been in it, like they have a little bit of an advantage. So what Rachel has done here has been incredible. Can I just say one other thing, right? Obviously, to JP as well, it's a brilliant win for Limerick and for JP, and it's great to see him win international. It's the most iconic race. But Henry de Bromhead has probably escaped a little bit of limelight here, right? And just for any manager out there, Dale, right? A good number of years ago, Henry would have lost his key client in basically in the pots. He had all the sizing horses. And then all of a sudden, the Gigginstown and JP supported him. And like what he's done this year as well has a little bit slipped under the radar because of Rachel, right? But what a manager and what a team of horses he has built now. And basically to kind of get kicked, recover, and build it right up to the very, very top. I think he's third in the British Trainer Championship at the moment. So just a phenomenal year for him.
Yeah.
And what a turnaround. And also to have the confidence and the faith in Rachel, and like to allow her to build, like I'm sure he probably would have had people saying, "Oh, you need to put up Ruby or Barry Geraghty or maybe the stronger lads." But he saw it, Jigginstown and JP and all supported her, and it's just a phenomenal story. It's just hard to fathom. It actually kind of equates me to a little bit to Grod Hegarty this year, right, Dello? I'm sure you would have heard about that. Like Grod Hegarty is with St. Patrick's here in Limerick, right? Who are between a third and a fourth tier club here in Limerick hurling, and even have been lower, right? And I'm sure there's plenty clubs around the country who are small clubs and they have a very good player. And let's say the neighbouring big clubs are looking for them and they have people in their ear saying, "Oh, geez, you'll find it very hard to play for the county while you're playing with that club and you need to be playing a club hurling at a better standard." Well, Grod Hegarty has proved that theory wrong as well, the same as Rachel Blackmore has done. So it can be done. So there's just a link there to say, like, that basically that determination, the belief, the vision, huge amount of hard work and time, but just two incredible stories.
Yeah, and you're a great man to give that bit of coaching info every week. I think our listeners love that. But I would have, you know, when the Limerick City clubs were stronger, particularly Clahan, I suppose I'm thinking of when I started playing, TJ, we would play them a good bit, and then we'd play Christians the odd time, and his father sure was a Christians man. Are Christians gone now, TJ? Christians gone. Yeah, Gerald was a what? What a powerhouse! You wouldn't might be playing centre back for the club in an old challenge match of a Thursday night. You wouldn't want to see Hago coming in centre forward on you, like you'd like to go back centre back at the other side, like. But are they gone now, Christians?
Christians and Clahan have basically more or less amalgamated. Started underage, so just the lack of numbers. But Clahan for years would have kind of just mopped up all those other players in like, and St. Pat's and Clahan are adjoining, right? But in fairness to Clan, for a long number of years before hurling and football, they would have given people a chance to play at senior level, and that kind of seemed to be the draw. And I have seen in other places where people have felt the need to jump clubs. Well, as I said, it's just a story that is linked to, whereas Garrod wouldn't have had that senior hurling club platform. He probably wouldn't have come from an underage in St. Pat's, where they would have literally probably played in the C or D competitions or whatever that low level are, and it's just found himself to be hurler of the year. So again, it's an unbelievable story.
Yeah, it's great loyalty as well, like from him, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure plenty would have been asking him to move over and tip away him with him. They have great facilities St. Patrick's. Yeah. They have lovely ground. And I just think of, when I think of St. Patrick's, I think of Eamon Phelan and Hammy Dawson. They'll be letting you in to train there with the floodlights, and just great down to earth people, you know, and that is a great angle on it, TJ, as well. Mark?
Yeah, and I was going to say, Mark, before I go, but the Henry de Bromhead story is for every manager out there, the best guess taking a kicking, right? There is a huge story there as well, because like, it looks brilliant now, and look what Henry has done. But you go back the last 10, 15 years, look at all the beautiful horses Henry had. The Pats has decided to move out. He had to rebuild it, and he's back. Like, so it's a bit like Davy Moyes at the moment. Yeah, you know, to put him up, and now he's in for manager of the year.
Yeah, but there's another big story behind the whole Henry de Bromhead thing, TJ, and so far that the horse that won the Gold Cup and won the National were two horses that were bought and by John Nellan at one pint of pints. And I don't know whether anybody has... Dale, you were on the RTA radio.
On the radio. Yeah, with him. He was on before.
Did you hear John Nellan's interview before the race?
I did. Did you? Before the race?
Did you see the piece of video
of him watching the race? Did you see that?
Mm.
And the funny, did you hear, that wasn't even his own home. He was on the way back from the races in Cork at the point to point. And he called into a fella he knew because he said that he wouldn't make it back to his own place to watch the National. And you meant caught him on video. I thought it was brilliant. Like, but did you hear the piece how he named the two horses?
Yeah.
Manila Indo and Manila Times. He has the hotel Manila in Clanmel, and he was doing night porter late one night, and he was filling out the... because the board horses were bought in the same year at the fall sales. And there was three papers on the counter, the Times, the Indo, and something else. And
the Manila Indo, was...
Manila Times.
It was the exact one.
And was it the exact one, was it?
It was useless. Sorry, Larry, if you're listening back there.
But this is a small world because, and I mentioned earlier on about how GA and horse racing is intertwined, and National Hunt in particular. In 1997, I played with the intermediates in Cork, and we played Clare actually, Anthony, and I was centre back. I felt a Pat Minogue was centre forward and hit me a right welt of a shoulder, dislocated my shoulder.
Married to Anthony Foley's sister, Rosie Foley, the late great Anthony Foley's sister. Brilliant underage player, yeah.
Oh, Pat was, I played against him at Flannan's and Coleman's as well, so. I dislocated my shoulder in the first round of the championship, and I played with the club maybe 2 months later. I was cornerback in the team. I would have been a regular, I suppose, centre back on the team at the time. But I was cornerback as my first game back, and we were playing Valley Rovers. I got split open under the eye here, and the blood was fucking flowing into. I couldn't play. And next while, this woman ran out in the field, and she said, "Come over to the sideline to me." And I had no clue who she was. I had no idea who she was. And she was wearing a Tipperary top on her. And I said, so she must be with Valley Rovers. So I was, went into the corner anyway, and she says, "I'm going to glue your eye." Now, this is 97. "I'm going to glue your eye," she said. "What? Glue my eye? Get out of the way." I said, "I'll be back." And I was like a greyhound now waiting for the hill because I could see the ball coming up the field, and I was in Parky Ring in the corner. And I said, "I got to get out the field." She caught me by the ear, and she held me back. She said, "Stay here now for 30 seconds," she said. "And you'll be on for the rest of the day." So I said, "That's grand enough." Anyway, the blood stopped, the glue worked, right? And I was saying to myself afterwards, who is this angel that came from heaven like? And I mentioned Ray Rochford to you before, right?
Yeah.
And he's a great club man of ours. But this woman was Bernadine Rochford. She was a Tipperary team doctor at the time. And she happens to be married to John Nellan.
Trini Mac, so small world.
Isn't that a small world there now? And I never said eyes on her since then or before that. But that happened, 1997.
Yeah. And you know, the Manila, I have a fair idea of what he does to make it for our listeners. He buys kind of foals, isn't that right, Mark? And then rares them.
Correct.
Breaks them at twos,
starts riding them at three. And Corky Carroll is his manager there as well. And then goes on to 4-year-old to try and win a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old pint to pint, and then sends them on to, we say, out of the National Hunt field, onto, we say, the bigger owners and stuff like that. And that's where the likes of JP, and he was very complimentary on JP yesterday, and Frank Bernie. He said, "There's no messing." He said, "2 minute conversation, you either want to buy the horse or you don't, and that's done, check it in the post, good luck."
And did you hear the little rub he gave to another major owner. Like he wants the horses called Manila Hoagie, obviously, do you know, because that's the hotel.
Yeah.
And it's a bit of it always will be.
I actually know it.
Yeah, fabulous hotel. Like, we stayed there actually way back in 2002 when Murphy's gang won the derby. I tell you, we didn't go back to him the following year. We moved into town because we figured getting taxis out there and walking out to the Manila every night. But an absolute class hotel. I was at a couple. Fergal Hegarty, I think, our teammate, was married there as well. We had great days and nights down there with John. And but like,
he did buy one horse off of him to Anthony.
Well, there's we're talking obviously about Jigginstown, but he didn't want to take. He didn't want to take the Manila off the, and some agent got onto him and said, "Look, you're losing out on a lot here because they're the biggest buyers in the industry." So I said, we tried to compromise with him. I would have called it Manila Air or Manila Rhine, but there was no. So I said, I let him off. So I tell you, some men, I'd say.
Tough man. Great. Tough but look, overall story is brilliant because what it has proved is the Irish with a small population here that we have the best horse breeding scenario in Europe, like without question. And 23 out of 28 winners in Cheltenham, Irish trained and bred. And what's even better, Anthony, is that there was a lot of smaller owners and smaller trainers won in Cheltenham this year. So you have your Willie Mullinses and your Sneezy Foster Straw, Gordon Elliott's, and I suppose the small amount, Paul Hennessy down in your neck of the woods, Hoagie, he had a winner there as well this year. And the likes of Gavin Cromwell, up and coming trainers as well. But the national hunt scene is brilliant at the moment in Ireland, and long may it continue.
Yeah, it's something I would have noticed, like, as I said, from a distance, you know, you just tune in for the big ones. You know, it's the way that, you know, we hope for the size of the country, you know, and the way we just seem to be dominating the big, all the racing at the moment, you know. But Jesus, in Aintree and in Cheltenham, I was watching just the way that, the Irish come over and are just cleaned up, you know, and it's fantastic, you know. Something, you know, I know the industry is massive to the country and we should be hugely proud of, you know. We're the kind of the benchmark. I was over in Kentucky years ago on a holiday with the wife, and we went down to a few of the stud farms, and sure, it's all Irish over there. Like, it's all the head guys managing all these farms over there. They're all Irish. They're, you know, whether it's Irish, the lads like own it, like the JP, but, you know, even the sheikhs and all these, they want the Irish guys in there managing the setups, you know, because they have the reputation. And it's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, I think at one stage, listening to, you know, in between races, listening to the commentary, that one of the presenters on ITV racing, obviously said, God, he says, Cheltenham, we could kind of half understand with the amount of them that came over, but they've only 12% of the runners here and they're still 50-50. Now, I think the UK or England or whatever won it out eventually, whatever. But for 12% of the runners, like, to be still 50-50 is incredible. But look, the horses weren't too successful for me anyway over the weekend. I backed the favourite in the Grand National lifting. But TJ, I had a little bet on, I had my standard Tenere Tree on Shane Lowry that I do, and he played great actually in the golf, and the putter was cold, and he's normally a great putter, but he still played very well. I think he finished 21st, but I said I'd pick one then. And so I like to do that. I like to let him in the golf play two rounds and see who's in contention or a few shots off, you know, rather than like Hoagie's horse in the Grand National, like he didn't even get mentioned, like so. So I like to do that, but I just saw 18-1 about Hideki, and I had a little bit of 18-1, and I tell you what, I don't know if you watch it, TJ, do you watch the golf?
I do. I watched a little bit of it yesterday.
I had some roller coaster around 9 o'clock last night, TJ, when he went taking out three woods, and he could have tapped it up and got a handy pair into the water. Oh, I tell you, a few of the lads I know in on various WhatsApp pages, I'd am told that I was on him, Hideki. And of course, they were driving me to mint. He's gone. You want to try and have a word with the caddy. But a great story as well, though, you know, isn't it? That it wasn't Dustin Johnson, you know, always a first time winner like that is a brilliant story.
There's actually some brilliant stories in golf at the moment. Even that guy who came second, I don't know how you pronounce his name, is it Zella Torres, that's where he came out of, even the size of him. And
Will.
Will, yeah. The what you call
the lint he can poke it in, as you said.
There's another guy there, right? We were kind of joking at home. He played quite well. I think he finished in the top 10, Corey Connors. We were kind of slagging that. Was he one of the boys from Rakhil? So
well, you said it now. You said it.
But yeah,
we have the neighbour, you've nothing, kid.
We did a bit as well. We were on Patrick Reed, but I have to credit my brother Dave, you know, my young fella Callie Dave picked him, and I was kind of just part of the bit. But great fun. Just goes to show the pressure. He was six shots clear at one stage, Hideki, playing good stuff. He was an unbelievable Saturday afternoon where I just took off. But you could nearly feel, even though there was no real crowd there, you could nearly feel that pressure. And like, you'd nearly say that Xander was just coming right, like only for that ball going in the water, you'd be kind of thinking, was he going on 16?
If he parties way home, could have been a playoff, like, because Hideki bogeyed 17 and bogeyed 18.
Well, there was no pressure on him in 18. Like, you know what they say in golf? Yeah. If you have two, take two. But I guess we did in 18. Like,
but there you go, TJ.
The pressure.
Yeah, Schauffele has major one, at least one anyway. I think if he hasn't two, but yeah. Like, he had played brilliantly. He was the only ball in the water on the 16th, whole day yesterday.
Was he? Go away. Well,
and there you go. Right, like, yeah. He's staring down, like, the barrel. He has your man under pressure.
But wasn't it some comeback by him? Because he lost shots on 3-4 and he had a double bogey on 5. He went from 8 under back to 4 under. And your man was going to 13 under. There was 9 shots between him. And then he went 6 under for the next 9 or 10 holes. And like he was in pole. I won't say pole position because he was 2 shots off of Hideki. But he certainly had momentum going on to 16. I'd say he couldn't believe that he hit the, in your man in the comments, either an 8 or a 7 iron, but he thought he caught it one slight bit heavy. But it just, I must say, the precision that's in golf is phenomenal, lads. It is a real precision game. They know exactly what shots they're playing, and it has to come off to within a kind of a foot or 18 inches of where they're hitting it. The skill levels is phenomenal.
You only realise when you go out to Denmark, you know, I was lucky enough to be at the Ryder Cup there one time. Actually, when you see them doing it on the television, it can seem like Jack Maloney would say, no one on him, like, you know,
yeah.
It's actually when you're there and you can visualize 180 yards out from the green and you're watching this fella putting it into 3 foot, like, that's when you're really, yeah. But I think there's a good point there, though, Mark. Did Schauffele, we'll say, Hoagie, I don't know if you follow that now, the golf, but when he made the comeback, like, and started, was there no pressure on him when he was doing that, let's say, and then all of a sudden he went up onto the 16th
I'm here. There's
two shots in it. Your man is wobbling. And did that come into play then? Did he start feeling what Hideki was feeling?
Yeah. Especially, look, there's no doubt, whatever sport you're involved in, you'll always say if you're going over the carefree attitude, there's less pressure on you. There's no doubt about that. I still thought that he is a very experienced player in America, Xander Schauffele. And I just think I would say he went for it, Anthony, because he went straight at the pin, whereas the other players during the course of the round had gone up to the, we'll say, the left-hand right side, they're looking at the television, and were hoping for the ball that might kick and might roll down. But he actually went straight for the pin. He went for the juggler, in my opinion. I felt that he thought he had Hideki on the ropes, and he went for the killer. He went for the killer blow. And look, on this occasion, it probably had his cost him. Whereas if he played safe and went for the middle of the green, he'd been still there. He would have still had 17 and 18 to come. I don't think the pressure got to him, Anthony. I think like you meant Butch Harmon's on the television, I think he caught the shot heavy and just came up. One more yard would have done him because he was bang on line, like.
I know, but just amazing. One ball in the water all day long and that's the ball.
In the drink.
It's why there's so much made of sport and team sport and pressure and dealing with that headspace and trying to get a team prepared to go down the stretch. Like, being in front like he was out on his own, he's huge pressure. He's six shots clear. Like, you're kind of saying, I'd imagine he's saying to himself, Jesus, I can't shake it up from here. Then when Schauffele goes back to -4, there's no pressure on him. He drives on. Now he's trying to get to a pace where he's trying to put it up. Like, tactically, Rachel Blackmore, she saw the horse coming back that was in front. She slowed it from 3 out to 2 out because she was in the box seat. Like, how many times have teams been 2-1 up or 2 points up with 3, 4, 5 minutes to go? It's a pressure to hold on. And how many times, Dillo, have you seen teams gone 10, 12 points down at halftime, go to the dressing room, and you kind of say, right, lads, we've nothing to lose now. Throw off the shackles and go for it. That's just a massive.
We've the perfect man with us, TJ, today. Hoggy, you were the masters, or the best I've ever seen in my lifetime, of being ahead and driving on, going away. Like, you were four shots ahead the final day of the Masters. You'd win it by 8 or 9.
Yeah, but that's the thing that stands out for me in golf is like the sports, I suppose, that we've all played. It's instinctive. You know, you're in the moment. It's happening so fast. The thing about golf is, like, you're walking up the 16th fairway and you know the crowd is roaring and you think, this is it. Like, I'm on the home stretch. You have so much time to think. Like, it's the mental battle, I think, particularly in the likes of the Masters. Like, it's, you know, standing over a ball, do you overthink it? Like, that's, like, Mark is right. Like, the skill, the distance these guys, like Bryson DeChambeau and these guys, like, they've just brought the game to a whole new level. You can argue the way they've done it or whatever, but, you know, it's the mental thing. I just find phenomenal. And you can see it, like, sure, with our own, like, with Rory McIlroy. Like, you know, I even heard lads, Lawrence Donegan, actually, who tipped him. He was saying, like, actually fancy him, you know, because he's coming in off such bad form that's the kind of way he reacts. You know, he always responds. And I was thinking, Jesus, no way. But, like, he overthinks things. And I think the whole, you know, the way we've seen the video of Bryson DeChambeau throwing balls, or his caddy throwing balls down, and he literally pulling on him and driving him, you know, ridiculous distance. And that's got into his mind. And that's even before the tournament starts. But, yeah, it's that mental battle with yourself, nearly, you know, if you know, particularly if you're inexperienced and you're coming up. We've seen it, you know. That's the thing that for me, I just think is amazing. You know, with the top golfers, is the way they're able to, I suppose, manage that. You know,
and yeah, McIlroy is. I'm not sure what the exact numbers are, right? But for day one of these kind of majors, right, he's something like 64 over or something for day one, right? Because there's so much pressure on him before the event, right?
Yeah.
He has a shy first day, right? Yeah. And I think he's something like 48 under for days 2, 3, and 4 in like that'll just
tournament's gone.
The tournament's gone. I'm not sure what those numbers are, but it's something like that. It's way over and then way under for after that.
It
nearly tie it back to Rachel Blackmore, because Ruby was saying that he asked Ron Nogara one time about, you know, that mental pressure, missed the first one, you know, and he was on about Rachel had, she got a bit of criticism, I'd say, for falling off in one of the hurdle races. Did she teach that? No, I don't know how she'd stay on it. Anyway, what was the name of the horse?
Jason the Millicent.
Yeah, that's you're right. That's the one. And the horse swivered and on the jump and just lost her balance, I suppose. But he mentioned it, like, and he just said about her mental toughness, like, to get on with it. And he said he asked O'Gara about it one time, and he said, I should just approach the second one like it's the first one. You know, so you can tie it back into the golf, you can tie it back into the hurling, can't you? Mm. Often have we seen, like, not that often now, but TJ Reid missing a free early and the crowd nearly sent go, but TJ Reid is after missing. I said, maybe he's going to have an off day. But he never has an off day. Like, he just stands up to the second one, nails it, moves on, and before you know it, he has 110 scored from place balls.
You don't miss too many of them, Dela.
No, but there is the odd time, you know.
I know.
There is, but should Dela go back to 99, the Munster final against yourselves and ourselves, David Ford, 21-yard free? It probably decided the game, I think. From, like, we were on the ropes, we were gone, and I have no problem in saying it. You were doing all the pushing at that moment. Jesus, when David Ford hit the ball wide, it was like a shot in the arm. We went straight up the field and got a point. And that was the winning the game, as well as we were concerned at that time. Like, but you'd have to give great respect to the free tackles, both in hurling and football. And you mentioned O'Gara there a while ago. Like, his mental toughness, lads, over penalties and conversions and drop goals, and, like, to win a Grand Slam and a drop goal was phenomenal. Now he's transferring that into management, and he's become very, very successful with La Rochelle. And, like, you know, I like watching the rugby, but I will be specifically putting time aside to watch the Leinster-La Rochelle semi-final, like, I can tell you now, because I'm really... I know Brian O'Driscoll set up a tweet last night, Rodge against Leinster, like, you know? It's not La Rochelle, like, it's Rodge. It's going to be fierce, exciting.
You can have my 80 minutes of that as well, Mark, on the rugby. I'd be out there about that. kicking it out into the stand and getting a round of applause.
whether you're coaching at, you know, junior club level or you're at the elite level, you're always saying, like, if you make a mistake, forget about it, don't compound it by making another mistake after it. And these guys, like the likes of O'Gara and Rachel, well, yeah, I don't know, Rachel Blackmore is, you know, in that, but, you know, she's at the top of her game, and, you know, these top guys, that's the ability to have, like the likes of TJ, they missed a free, it's forgotten about. They're already thinking the next one. And it sounds so simple, but as you all know, you make a mistake and the crowd starts roaring at you, you know, and you see it, you know, and there's, the head is gone. You know, you're coaching lads, and you see his head is gone now. You know, he'll be 10 minutes before he gets back into the game. And I suppose that's the difference with the elite guys, is that, they brush it off, you know, whether it's a free throw in basketball or whatever the sport, you know, it's done, it's the next one, you know, and that's what I suppose separates the really top guys.
They learn from it too, Hoggy. They just learn from those mistakes. But to say, what we were saying was a mistake is a decision, but mistakes happen, but a constant mistake is a decision. Like, so that's the piece to fix. Like, so those people fix that really well.
The All-Ireland semi-final, TJ 2015, I'd say Clare and Limerick, above in Craw Park. Was it Shane?
13.
Taking the free? Is it Shane Dowling was taking the freeze? Is he playing?
No, Declan Hannan.
Declan Hannan. He missed an ocean of freeze at the start of that game, and it sucked the life out of Limerick in that match.
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, like in sport, anything can happen in any given day, and those things can go away from you. But it's just a recovery. Like I said, that happened, Declan Hannan in 2013, and look at him now. He's learned hugely from it and just learned massively.
It has made him, but I was going back to the free takers that we have in the country at the moment, like the likes of TJ Reid, Patrick Horgan, Seamus Kenlon. Like, it is a surprise if they miss a free from, and I'm going also about 100 yards in now. Like, I mean, 65s are just like old, in the old days of 45 or 21, they just don't miss 65s anymore. Like, the conversion ratio and freeze from 100 yards in is phenomenal at the moment. But they're ferocious skill, lads.
Dello, pressure's a terror. I was going to say to you is, like, I know from myself personally, like, I would have felt most pressure as a manager. Like, as a player, it didn't seem to really, I kind of, being in the moment, as Hoggy said there, I kind of brushed through it. But I was going to ask you, like, where did you feel most pressure?
Never really felt any pressure, to be honest with you, TJ.
Right, okay.
You had the work done. It was a bit like the leaving cert. You had the time. You had the exams done. You had the study done, Della.
If it was like the leaving cert, we were in big trouble. I think, you see, if you're on the field and things are going wrong, you feel you can do something about it. Like, as in physically do something about it. You can go and make a block, grab a ball, drive it up the field. You can even catch one of your teammates and lift him off the ground or... But when you're over there on that sideline, like, and you're saying, what changes can you make? Like, you know, and you probably maybe have four subs used at this stage. And you say to Richie Stakeland, maybe, or Hedgehog, which on the sideline with the Dubs, take, we've one left. I said, take a look back there, Richie, and see would any of them make a difference. And he said, sure, leave it at the four. You know, like, just, and that's no insult to the lads on the line. But like, you just have to weigh up, is the guy out there that you're taking off, is he going to, the sub going to improve it or not improve it? And that's why sometimes it's not great sense to use the five subs. Like, often with Brian Cody as well, you'd have seen that he didn't go down. He might have used two subs maybe, do you know? Mm. And pressure, it's a funny one. I think the older you get, you feel pressure. I honestly, you know, you think you've gone through stuff and that should help you. But the older you get, you kind of feel the consequences more. Youth is brilliant that way, that you're carefree and you say, ah, sure, I'll have another go at this next year anyway, sure. Do you know?
There's more wives, isn't there?
Yeah, that's it. Lads, we better talk about a bit of hurling anyway. And just in fairness to David Ford, if you're listening, Fordy, it wasn't your fault that tip broke Jamesy's hand in the semi-final and Jamesy would have slotted that one. And yeah, we wouldn't have got the speech. Welcome back to Lee side at all.
That was a couple of months later.
And in fairness, we had the back door to come back and get there if we were good enough. We weren't good enough. More about it. Yeah. We obviously, Friday was a big day for us. We're all expecting it, I suppose, since Monday or Tuesday, but we got kind of a roadmap of our stuff to be going ahead, obviously. And we know the league is back now, the 8th and 9th of May. I suppose that was the thing, that we're going to maybe have groups of four in the league, or groups of three even, and give a longer training period. They're allowed back to end the 19th, I think. So it's a shorter lead in now to the league, but you'll be guaranteed your five matches, I think. So that's what they gave there. Championship then is set out, I suppose, that we're going to have 27th of June is the start date for that, and the 22nd of August, which is actually funny that it's very similar to what we've got used to over the last couple of years, is the date for the All-Ireland final. We've had a bit of let's say, feedback from people on social media again now, Mark, you're as well off not to be on Twitter times because you read stuff. I did a bit of radio yesterday and I had a bit of a go at the GAA for maybe too easily giving up the elite status and that we could have kept things normal enough because the league, I think we'll talk about that, but like two that jumped out of me on Twitter were Richie Power, your old teammate, Huggy. How are clubs without floodlights supposed to train in September, October? I kind of don't buy that because we're so used to clubs training in September and October and November that but I suppose, you know, we get out. And Brian Whelan, like a strong hitting one. He's not that long on Twitter either, Mark, but he cut loose there on Friday night. Well done, Tall, in headquarters. He said, basically telling 97% of our players that we don't really care about you. A disgrace. Hashtag disgrace. So I'm not so sure, Les, once we gave up the early part of the year, that there was anything much more we could do for this year.
Yeah. Look. There is certainly a bit in what the lads with Richie and Brian have said. I think the COVID situation has lassoed the hands of Croke Park, I suppose, in some respects. They're trying to do the best they can with what they have. I suppose if I had a complaint or a disagreement, I would say I think they've given too much credence to the National League. Anthony, I think they could have shortened the time period for the National League or actually went away and went straight into a club championship, an inter-county championship with your four matches and go back to the old format and not really concentrate on the league. If it was my decision, I would have scrapped the league. I would have given the inter-county lads 3 or 4 weeks training and I would have went straight into my championship and have your four matches in Munster and Leinster and get it down to your All-Ireland semi-finals and finals.
So you'd go back to round robin in the Munster Championship, Mark?
I would be going back to that. Yeah, I do. Because I think long term anyway, Anthony, that is the way it's going to be. We're going to be going with that. The league, the fact that there's going to be no league final this year is basically going to be just matches. They're just, I suppose, official challenge matches, really, is what I would concern or what I would say with the league at the moment. But then there will be a part of me in saying, well, look, at least the GAA are able to provide inter-county games and clubs with championship for the year. And your club player now, who has been able to do nothing for the first 4 months of the year, knows that there's going to be a club championship coming around the corner. I think that is important as well. So I think, you know, in the overall context, we know exactly what's going on right now, barring the pandemic gets worse. That's the other side of it. And maybe 2021 could be last if the virus starts to get hold again. So we are by no means out of the woods and out of the neck at the moment, because there could be a lot of trouble around the corner if this pandemic gets worse. But I would also say, and I've no problem in saying this, I still think that the club championship should be played before the inter-county scene. I would always think that you play your, I would treat it as maybe the lesser standard game, and it gives the opportunity for fellas that are playing in club championship to be recognised within the county scene, to be brought onto the panel and make a contribution later on in the season with his inter-county team. I've always been of that view.
Yeah, I suppose the problem there, Mac, would be the Munster club, the Leinster club, the All-Ireland club, the where do you fit it all in? Hoagie, what did you think they did the best they could do?
I think no matter what option they came out with, it wasn't going to please everyone. You know, it was kind of one of those ones where you were damned if you do and you were damned if you don't. I agree with Mark on some of the points. Like, if all things were equal, I would prefer to see the club championship be rolled out first. But I think, obviously, we understand why that can't happen, you know, just with the current restrictions and that kind of thing. So it is what it is. In terms of the structure, the inter-county setup, whether they went for the league or just went for a kind of, you know, round-robin championship, I don't know, look, you can make arguments for both. I'm just glad to see that we are getting back into it. And within the next month or so, we will start to get back into, you know, some hurling of some description. On Richie's point, I mean, I think it has some merit, to be fair to him. I mean, I'm not sure what the setup is down below, guys, but, you know, I know from my experience when we would have won county championships, you know, locally and that there was, you know, it wasn't the easiest thing trying to get pitches with floodlights to train as the winter starts to come in. You know, there's not that many of them. Now, obviously, with Dunmore, the Kilkenny Centre of Excellence, that's alleviated the problem, but there are a few places which have floodlights. So there is a kind of a bottleneck, if you like, in Kilkenny. I mean, we would have gone down to Carlow for facilities, even with Kilkenny, for proper facilities and with pitches with floodlights to train. So that's just, I suppose, a local issue here in Kilkenny. And that's probably what's prompted Richie's tweet, if you like, that if you've got a championship where all teams are looking for it, the teams that have the floodlights have a competitive advantage.
And I suppose he is on about Hoagie there as well. He is on about like that this time round. If it was down to the Kilkenny County final, someone might let you in as a favour.
Yeah.
But now he's looking at it that everyone will be in it. And
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And again, look, maybe some counties have, stronger facilities. You know, as I said to you, that's exactly it. You know, you've got Dunmore, which is the Kilkenny Centre of Excellence, which is floodlit and it's great, but they won't let club sides in because you can't be seen to be favouring one club side over another. Yeah. So it's basically you're all, and then there's one or two clubs have pitch, but that's it. So there's a problem there with playing, expecting the club sides to go and train in the winter, and dark evenings. But again, the year that's in it, I don't see a kind of a way around that. We're all hoping that with the vaccine and that kind of thing, that by the time we come around to kind of August, September, October, that we're in a position to have a full club championship, and to Brian's point, Brian's tweet, I've seen him on Twitter as well. Like, I can understand the frustration, like the root branch, the core of the GAA is the club scenario. But again, with current restrictions in place, our hands are tied. We can only go the way we can go at the moment, which is with the inter-county setup and for this year. Whether how you want to approach it moving forward in other years, that's a different discussion, But I can understand the frustration. I see the lads there.
It's really only gone back a month, though, to my mind, the club stuff. Mm. They were told the Gallard final would be July, and then that was the route and game plan, I suppose. Ironically, we'd have had the league final yesterday if they had started the league, had kept the elite status. That was a point I'm trying to make. Like there was no danger in playing a national league with inter-county players. Like we saw exactly. how that could be run last year. Yeah,
that's the bigger issue.
Yeah, well, I'm not so sure, TJ. I just wanted to ask you a couple things. There's 11 county finals, I think, across the country that haven't even been played. There's nothing about, and I keep thinking, TJ, that county boards don't really want their county finals on in September. They kind of nearly always wanted them in October. A case in mind, and you'll be saying that you couldn't be doing it, but like my birthday is the 22nd of October, and the first county final I lined out in, I was a sub in 87, but it was 89 against Six Mile Bridge, beaten actually, but it was my birthday, 22nd of October. Now, I had been on the Clare panel, a sub as well, early that year. Waterford beat us by 22 points in Thurles on the 29th of May. And the county final was on the 22nd of October, right? So fast forward a good few years, 18 years to 97. We're lining out the county final. And Clare had won the All-Ireland Minor and All-Ireland Senior Championship. Historic, never to be done again. Or maybe, hopefully, we will do it again. But great, unprecedented times for Clare. And yes, the county final was the day after my birthday. So there's a theory there that county finals, TJ, that they want them on at a certain time of the year. Where they're going to get a big crowd in and a good audience,
Yeah, and I'll start with the first year I was in St. Thomas's 3 years ago. The county final, there was no pandemic. The county final was in November in Galway, and that's been regular there for years, county final in November. Where do I stand in all this? I think if the four of us were tasked with coming up with the ideal plan and the ideal fixture list to suit club and county, I think we'd struggle. I don't think we'd get agreement. I think that seems to be the main problem. For me, hurling is a brilliant place right now. What is the overall plan for the next 5 years is one of the questions that I'd be asking as to where we want to see club and county, where do we want to see county finals? We all know that the best time to fix the roof is when the sun is shining, right? And for me, I think there's an onus on county boards here, right? I think that we absolutely need all our club players playing summer hurling. We need them playing in June, July and August, right? And if that's a little bit like the rugby where you play a structured league, where all the fixtures have to take place and there's a nice prize there for the winners, that's something that needs to improve. And I just think that what came out the weekend, like leaving out all last year's county finals and the minor run 2020 is not ideal because it gives rise to a vacuum and all these questions. But for me, it's the bigger picture. What do we want down the road? We need the county game. That's a must. We need heroes. We need that played at a level that's just where it's going. Like, that's a must. We cannot forget that. Yeah. Yeah. But we also absolutely need all our club players. Like, if this is part of the future, you could see a mass exodus to the US in normal times, where every club hurler could just go to the States for those 3 months, and you've nothing going on. So the answer is somewhere in the middle. For me, club hurlers all over the country, everywhere, have to be playing summer hurling. June, July, and August, whether that's getting ready for the championship, but it has to be with some form of a purpose. They can't be just glorified kind of the junior challenge matches where you just kind of throw a team for the sake of it. So the answer is somewhere in there for me.
Yeah, well said. Well said. Mark?
Yeah, no, TJ made a point there about the mass exodus. I think there will be fall off in numbers, be it at adult level or maybe be it at underage level, across all sports. When we're just talking about the GAA and hurling in particular, I suppose. I don't see there being a mass rush back from club players. I particularly the guys in their older 20s, I would say, that maybe are in relationships or maybe are starting out in their careers at a work point of view or maybe starting young families. I think that they may be getting used to being at home on a more regular basis. It would be part of me maybe say they're very anxious to get to the field now, maybe get out of it. But I think, I find it myself, to be honest with Anthony, I'm quite happy finding other activities to fill the void that's there from a GA point of view at the moment. And, you know, other people, I often found this, that when I stopped playing myself November and December, I also looked at other sports, be it maybe soccer or maybe rugby, to fill that void when you're involved in sport all the time. And I think our older generation of players may not go back playing after the actual lockdown that they've had for the last 4 or 5 months, which I think would be a concern for the GAA.
Ginny, if that happens, Mac, we'll be all under pressure anyway. We'd be all watching rugby with you for an hour. Hopefully, look,
But you see, Anthony, like when you're on the treadmill, like, and you're at Hampstead, you're running and racing because it's Tuesday, Thursday, Friday night, or Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday night, and you've done it since you're 6 or 7 years of age, and you get to 35. Like, it has just become part of your life cycle. Now that
would you give it back then, Mark? Would you give back you when you were on that treadmill, let's say, and would you, when you look back, do you regret any of that? Because I don't regret a minute of it. Like,
well, I got a huge amount of enjoyment out of it, Anthony. Great friends, and I suppose it has given me a great grounding in life, insofar as all the good traits that you'd want out of any individual, be it in business or being a father or a family man, has given me great traits. I wouldn't give back any of it, but I would also say, Anthony, that I missed out on a huge amount of things that I didn't get exposure to because I was involved in GAA. Whether I would be any better individual or a different individual, I don't know, because I never got that exposure. But it was only until the pandemic came around that I found that there was another world outside of GAA, I'd have to say. And yeah, it's a very, very big world. And I would say, from a business point of view, Anthony, I went out my own 18 months ago, and all of a sudden I found that any day of the week and any time I can go and meet a client, and a client can ring me, and as you know, 3 A's in business, like availability, affability, and ability. And the availability is the number one, because if you're not available, your affability or your ability will never come into it. And I'd have to say that being involved in the GAA, as a player or being a manager, it consumes your life, Anthony. And you know that, and we all know that sitting in here, it does consume your life. And we were amateur status. So I have seen another side of life, Anthony, over the last 18 months because of the pandemic that I wouldn't have seen other than the pandemic. So, or because of the pandemic. And, you know, there's a life after GAA as well.
Yeah, you've been strong on that. But, you know, that is, I'd say an awful lot of people, Mark, have found the pandemic absolutely savage on their lives, and there's so many extra things we're hearing about mental health, and you've been positive. Your experience has been okay. You're lucky, I'd say, in what you do. It gives you that freedom, and you have a massive interest in horse breeding and that side of things. So an awful lot of people, I'd say, be dying to get back to normal GAA.
Oh, I absolutely 100%. I'm making the analogy about the hamster on the wheel, like that. You, it is part of your life structure. And I've no doubt when I three young lads, we'll end up going to the field every, you know, if it's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 6:30, I go back into that regime and stuff for that. And I've nothing against that. But I'm just saying that people need to prioritise, I suppose. We were lucky enough to be involved with inter-county teams, and you knew that you had to prioritise. But there was other, like there was weddings. I'm thinking back now to the, I don't think I can remember any birthday parties or any weddings. And I remember going out with a girl for a long, and I'd say we never went away on a weekend away, or we never went away to a sun holiday, like, because you were involved. And it was expected that as a club fella, that you would be available for training. And it was frowned upon if you wanted to train. Where's your man? He's going away with the old doll for a weekend. Oh, for Christ's sake. Are you serious? And he's not training. For Christ's sake. Do you know what I mean? So
You're talking to that guy now. Cut his honeymoon chart for a first round replay.
Yeah, yeah. 1998, County Intermediate Final. We had a player who went to a wedding on a Friday. And we were playing the following Sunday week, right? So it was 10 days. He went to the wedding on Friday. He told the manager, look, is it okay if I miss training? No problem. We were training Sunday morning. No sign of my man Sunday morning. He got picked to play the following Sunday, and his man got a goal and a point off him after the first 10 minutes, and he never played again.
if he'd had a storm, his man was taken off, to be legendary story.
Absolutely. But I suppose the big thing with that match, like, is that we were beaten by 2 points, and we conceded 2-10 in the first half, and we conceded 2-12 overall. We got them boys a malaise over the fact that I said a player might have been picked, even though it was never majorly discussed. And
what year was this, man?
It cost us 1998. We were beaten in the intermediate final by Castlelines, and like, it took us three more years to get back up senior.
Well, I would say there, and I'll give a quick example about coming home early from the 3 days we cut off the honeymoon. And back, boys had drawn with Tullagh in the first round of the championship. So I just said to Elise, Jesus, like, I lost knockout championship. Like, she said, go on, sure, we'll nearly have enough for it at this stage anyway. And she would always say it was one of the best weekend. Like, I think the big thing, we had a brilliant weekend. We won the match. We had a great night. We all had a few jars again on the Sunday, and we came out and run the next round of the championship the following Sunday. But we had a brilliant party for nearly 2 days, finishing off our honeymoon or whatever, home from it. I think it's only later years, Mark. All this my waddy and biscuit stuff has come in, and you can't go out. We had great times after matches, TJ. After matches, going off for a few jars.
Absolutely the same. Like, hurling in the 90s was like unbelievable from a social side. Like, it was brilliant. I'd probably be a little bit different to Mark there. Like, yeah, it's a little bit like at the moment when you list you must match, right? And I hear people in the guards giving out about pay, or nurses giving out about pay, like, right? But you know that when you're getting into it, right? And it's the same with the GAA, right? Commitments, and it teaches us an awful lot. Like, for me, like, I don't have qualifications, and the GAA has taken me to places that I could only ever have dreamed of. So I would have nothing but positive things to say. I loved every minute of it with Gary Spillane, with Limerick. Jesus, growing up, I kind of out in kind of the sticks in Gary Spillane, the opportunity to go and captain Limerick and manage Limerick, even though I wasn't overly successful with trophies and stuff. Jesus, I'd do it all again, not a bother. I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, Hoggy, just before I go on to, like, I remember meeting Eilish on the pitch. No, she's a Kilmaley woman. Like, her brothers would have all hurled against me and that. But like, I remember meeting her on the pitch after the county final, and I just said, thanks. I said, wouldn't be here. And, you know, and Martin Sheedy was above collecting the Cannon Hamilton, the trophy in Clare. And I said, look, thanks for what you did 7 weeks ago or whatever. Like, you know, I have no regrets about that. And I don't think she has major ones either. Hoggy, you were the most involved team ever. Like, and your club was very strong as well.
Yeah, I understand where Mark has come from, in that, like, COVID has allowed you to kind of the time to spend at home and reflect on, you know, and probably more so from a lifestyle perspective, you know, working, people commuting up and down to Dublin or wherever, and they're going, Jesus, you know what? Actually, there's more to life than getting in the car at 7 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the morning and drive, you know, and people reflecting on where they're at and saying, is there a better way to do things? But purely from a sport, from a hurling perspective, I mean, like that, it would have been huge compromise. To be honest, probably more compromise on the partner side, because I was doing what I loved, you know. But like, leaving weddings that were invited because it was a friend of mine, not hers, and she's sitting there while I'm gone off for 3-4 hours to train to come back, you know, or, you know, not going on J1s, you know. My mate heading off to America or gone off to Australia, you know, traveling around, and I said, well, no, I'm sticking around because I'm hurling on the off chance I can make something in here, you know. And But that were my choices, you know. Like, and you know, when I look back on it now, Jesus, I wouldn't swap. I wouldn't, you know, there's absolutely just stuff I missed out on, but what I got in return more than makes up for it. And I suppose I'm very fortunate and conscious of that as well, that I had a lot of great days, you know. And it's actually, when I look back on it, and I met one of the boys yesterday, and you know, every time you meet them, and you're the same, lads, I'm sure, when you meet your buddies, straight away you fall straight back into that kind of that situation, you know, and the banter is the exact same that it was like a couple of years ago, and you're kind of, you remember the social times you spent together, because you end up, you know, you're so close and that. But no, Jesus, like I you know, I naturally, you know, even with the club, you know, when I finished the club, I found it quite hard, you know, all the winter evenings, not having to go in to train, you know, and that kind of thing. And you get to spend time with your family. But Jesus, you know, you do miss it as well, and you're finding other things to fill the gap. So I wouldn't be as strong as Mark on it. I definitely would say I got a lot more out of it than what I gave up, you know.
Yeah, but that whole commitment and club and county stuff, right, is just unique. It is the GEA.
It is.
And it's very difficult. And it just kind of reminds me of the statement to kind of say, to those who understand, right, no explanation is needed, right? Mm. And to those who don't understand, no explanation is possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
another beauty.
TJ, I can remember, I'd say the first year I was after getting married, we were above a Jackie's in Roscommon for the Christmas. And I remember having to say to Jackie at 8 o'clock in Stevens' morning, listen, we need to be back in Kill at 11 o'clock for the long puck. Like, but that was the expected thing. Like, and but Hoggy, I'm just thinking of a story there. You mentioned about going away training. I can remember I was at Derek Barrett's wedding, and Sean Og was at the table with us. And his wife now, Siobhan, was also at the table. But Sean Og had to go away. As you know, Sean Og doesn't drink, so Siobhan made up for when he was gone away. When he came back from training, it was one of the funniest evenings. We're piking the water and stuff at the end of the night.
But Siobhan, we like David Ford, we apologise there for hanging you up to dry. I'm glad you enjoyed the wedding.
And another one. We were at Kevin Murray's wedding, and it was 2001, and myself and Joe were at it, and we were playing the county final. I think Bernard Ratcher was actually at it as well, the three of us. And Fergal McCormack, we were playing Mallow in the county final. And we made a conscious decision that we were gone at 9 o'clock. And it was a kind of a battle as to who was going to leave the wedding first. And we all kind of shook hands with Fergal and said, look, that was a Friday night. And none of us were drinking, though, obviously, all day long. But we said we were leaving at 9 o'clock, and we were hoping that we were forced out of the gap to just make a little point. And everybody was kind of watching what was going to happen, who was going to stay. And of course, we're all texting, what time did McCormack leave? Was he there late? Did he drink a lot?
TJ, I'll tell you, I'm going to remember this and watch it again sometime. And I go 7 or 8 years forward, and two of the Landers brothers are lining out for Killa in the county premier minor final in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, against Middleton probably, or someone like that. And be sitting anywhere near Mr. Landers, or looking down at him probably on the sideline in charge. We're saying, Daffla, during the COVID thing that time, lads kind of decided that hurling was kind of not for him at all. It was other things in life.
And his heart pumping out through his chest there.
Oh, and he fighting with the linesman, he fighting with the Middleton manager, and
Dello, before we get to those guys training early in the morning who are not good enough to play hurling, right? Why is there no league final?
I think it'll be another week of the fixtures, TJ. They're kind of really down. Sean Potts, I think, explained it. They're really down to 20 weeks for the championship, and then it goes back to the club. And if they had to,
I don't like it.
Yeah, so it could be a bit like Clare and Limerick last year. Like, you know, if they meet, they're going to call it the league final. No,
I don't like
but
it.
Is there a theory out there though as well, TJ, that a league should be a league? Did you, one of the years I was playing, I know you were probably playing as well, in fairness to your Hoggy, you know, we'll bow down to your youth. It was ran like that the league, whoever was top of us, won the league.
Won the league, yeah.
Is it not about consistency and doing the right thing every day and you finish top of the league? I don't see any problem with that.
You can't have that with the way it's structured with Division
A. You're not a hope with 12 teams, like, sure, you couldn't, like. Yeah, that's the other thing, to narrow it down into 8 and... So that's your 7 matches, whoever's top lads are league champions. League final is a great thing, I have to say. I agree with you. Having witnessed it with the Dubs, what it meant to us. Do you know, breakthrough, and even Clare, like, even, you know, my youth, I suppose, and I was trying to come in that Clare team that come up against that great Cork 3-in-a-row team. They were my heroes, like, because they won back-to-back leagues. So, and the league final is the big day, you remember, and coming home with the cup and all that. So, yeah, that's parcel of it. I suppose it'll only be for this year, though, TJ. I think, you know, there would be, as I said, we in their original structure, the league final was down for yesterday. So there you go, like.
Yeah. There's still a bigger picture there, Dale, to get all that, say, between Fitzgibbon Cup, underage.
There is.
Inter-county clubs, 100%. All-Ireland club final, trying to put all that together where you have universal happiness, I would say, I don't know who's going to fix that.
Yeah, I think, TJ, there has to come an acceptance that we may be without players. I don't know what you think about this, Hoggy, now, that we are sort of so precious with the 3 weeks for the county final, give them a chance to get ready. But you'd have to be ready for the semi-final anyway. And like, we are that bit precious. Like, you see the rugby players there that come off an international weekend, and they're straight back into the Heineken Cup. Or, like, there has to be an acceptance, I think, on one side from us that we may be missing some players because of the schedule.
Oh, you're talking at a club situation, Anthony.
No, I'm talking everything.
Yeah, I'd be very slow about going down that route. I mean, you're effectively, what you're saying is you're developing players at your club level, you know, to go on and represent the county. And once they get to that point, they're gone. You won't see him at the club then until, you know, you wheel around the championship, you know. And again, it's different in every county. I know there's league championship and league and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, I can only speak from my own experience. You know, we've got a league championship, if you like, which the league has a bearing on your championship. So it's 5 matches. And we were fortunate. And again, I know there's no Gaelic football, Kilkenny, but we were quite lucky. And again, with Brian, he was very much adamant that the club needed it. You know, so we were always released. Obviously, you know, I remember... And it stood to us, you know, it actually stood to us. I remember lads going away, say, after Leinster final, and it'd be stale. You'd be in training in the county for 5 weeks, maybe 4 weeks, play a Leinster final, and there'd be lads that wouldn't be in great form. Jesus, Richie Power, case in point, I always just see it. He used to time it. He'd go back, he'd play 2 rounds with Carrick Shock, 1 week, you know, within a week, and he'd hammer in a couple of goals and points. 16, you know, he comes back in then for the prep for the Ireland semi-final. He's like a different player. He's unmarkable, you know, and it's just that it gives us a freshness. Well, I think. No, I think you have to be careful at that point. Because I'd be keen on looking at is almost taking the responsibility off the county boards around fixtures and that, and centralising it a bit more, because I think there's too much flexibility. I think some county boards are very good and they're very structured, and you often see the counties that are performing well are the guys who have a really strong county board, a good chairman and that kind of thing. And then over years, that kind of slips. And then all of a sudden it goes to shit because you've got lads there who are not... don't have a clear kind of idea of how things should be run. And it's not by accident. And I think there's too much opportunity for slippage there, you know. And then you get a strong county manager who comes in and he starts dictating how things should be done. And all of a sudden, it's this county senior team is dictating how club is run, how the underage is run. Yeah. And that's, so you know, he's dictating down, whereas it should be really, you know, the county board, strong county chairman and that. And I don't think... some counties are equipped that way. So,
and Dale, that brings back to the point, almost, right, about playing a nice league in June, July, and August, right?
Yeah.
Even in inter-county season, right? Because the other thing now, Dale, is most county panels are probably taking, what, 36, 38 players, where there's a back end of 10, 12 players who are getting no game time with the county, or maybe a bit more. And spending $1 million+ on team preparation, which is fine. We all know where that's heading, right? Could you have a league, Brian, where there's a nice prize? I don't know what it is. It could be a training camp for the club. It could be a weekend away. And then, let's say Brian Lohan or John Kiley or Brian Cooney, whoever it is, right? There's a player struggling. I want you to go and play with your club. There's 2 structured league games coming up there. Try and get your confidence back. I think there's a lot of win-wins in that.
I was going to say that players are not stupid. You know, I see it at, you know, under, now that we're going to under 17 level, you know, so you've now got a situation with kids losing a year and they're expected then to step up to adult level. And people are saying, ah, yeah, but we've got an under 20s. Like, I see it here. Look, under 20s is run off in October, November. And, you know, the small rural clubs are not interested because they can manage to bring those couple of young lads through. But most of the bigger clubs, they just lose lads, you know, and it's not given the credit, you know, the minor you get to play in front of the county senior final, you know, and there's a kind of a recognition, like it's a marquee, you know, tournament. Same at adult level, you know, if you introduce a league, it's a bit like the league now, the inter-county league that you're talking about, TG, this year, there's no final. So there's no trophy. So effectively, it's going to be, you know, glorified challenge matches. You know, players will see that and they'll go, do you know what, actually, what are we playing for? You know, subconsciously, they won't say, they won't come out and say it, but, you know, they'll know that this is all this is getting yourself ready for a championship as opposed to a trophy at the end of it. And yeah, like, you know, you can't throw an old tournament in for the summer just for the sake of it to say, lads, you're getting game time. That's not going to stop lads from going off to America or, you know, doing whatever they want. You know, it has to be something that's meaningful, you know. And I think if you're a club player and you're sitting there and you're seeing you're lucky enough to have two or three guys in an inter-county squad and you know you're not going to see them till September. Well, you know, how important is this competition then, really, you know?
Yeah, that's it. A couple of things there, Huggy. I wasn't advocating lads going off to the county, you know, and wouldn't be seen at the club again. Like, somewhere where you two fair advantages there, I'd say. Yeah. And one of them might have changed. Football hasn't changed. You don't treat it that seriously. So that, I mean, I think of Clare, the amount of dual clubs in Clare that are equally strong football hurling, it's so difficult. The other thing is you had a down to a fine art as well, though, where you'd hammer someone in a Leinster final or Leinster semi-final, 5 weeks to the final, go back to the club now for a week or two, lads. I mean, it's changed times now since Galway came into Leinster. Dublin got a bit stronger. Round robin now in Leinster.
That. Yeah, I know. I appreciate that, Adele, but it came from the mentality, the mindset as well. Like, the Brian was always about club, you know. So there was a willingness there. Now, absolutely. Yes. So when he bet us, Dalo, in 2012, was it, in the Leinster final, the replay? Do you remember?
13.
Down in Port Leash, in 13. Yeah. You know, again, you know, that threw all the plans out. Yeah, you have a provisional plan in place, and more, you know, most of the years we were able to stick, but that threw it out the window and we had to adapt. But we always managed to get to a point where the league was more or less done by the time you came to August. And so that whenever we got, you know, whether it was the All-Ireland or the All-Ireland semi-final, you know, by September, it was pure championship. You know, it was knockout then at that point, you know. So, yeah, look, every scenario is different, but there has to be a willingness or an acceptance that there's an importance on the club situation, that it's not a situation that, oh, look, inter-county started now, so we're going to put club into hibernation for 3 months, you know. It's and again, that comes from, I think, from a central level. It has to come from a central level, because you get a strong county manager in.
I think a lot of us could look at the Kilkenny model, Brian. I didn't understand it for a long time. Yeah. But when to explain to me the tie-in with the league, it's a very good system, there's no doubt.
Well, yeah, and again, a bit like maybe Limerick, the way they went back and did a root and branch kind of review, you know, 10 years ago, whatever it was, TJ, like, that was something that they did, you know, in fairness to them, the credit, they went back, they recognised we hadn't been competitive at, you know, some minor level and that kind of thing for a number of years, back in the early 90s, and they restructured the county championship, both senior, junior, intermediate and junior level. And Brian, it's worked well, but...
Yeah, with some of those league games, let's say, that are leading to the championship, would clubs play them games without their inter-county players?
No.
It's five league games, TJ, as such. Yeah.
And they have every single match, TJ, no matter whether you're bottom of the league or top of the league, every match has a bearing on your championship. Yeah, has a significance. So if you're going out and you're top of the league...
I understand that, but I'm saying, how can you fix the issue, like, if inter-county is going to be the All-Ireland final at the end of July or beginning of August, right? How can you fix June and July? How can you fix that block for the club player?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Well, I suppose I appreciate that. And I was probably of the frame of mind that, you know, moving the inter-county away from September, you're losing that kind of showcase piece. Is there enough time to almost, you know, if you looked at it from a central level, rather than leaving it to the county boards to match, it comes back to the point that we mentioned earlier on about why is the county finals always on in October when only four teams are hurling in August, inter-county teams? It makes no sense. I could never understand that. So there was months where there was no club matches in the summer for a lot of counties, purely because they wanted to have their county final in October. So is there an opportunity whereby you revert back to the All-Irelands in September, you know, and then you mandate it that there is a period of time there in that kind of July, you know, June window, say, where there is an opportunity for club matches to be played. And then, you know, there's a kind of a secondary competition for the club lads. But at least they're getting a period of hurling in the summer that they need. You know, because hurling is a summer game, and we're talking about hurling as opposed to Gaelic football. You know, again, this is very simplistic. You need, and I know people have looked at it, but I think the caveat was always that, you know, you gave it back the power then. You said, right, this is the way we want it to work. It goes back to the county boards, and straight away they're tinkering at it and moving it and changing fixtures, because a county manager doesn't want to allow his lads back you know, for 2 or 3 weeks or, you know, whatever. And, you know, there is a certain amount of, there has to be a certain amount of inflexibility there as well. They say, no, they're the dates, lads. And the club matches have to be played, you know. I think.
I say the idea of the split season is because the way we were doing it for so long, Brian, and
yeah.
It wasn't working in counties, you know.
Yeah.
And there was no one, like, in Clare here, I think there's $5,000 to the club, the winners of the Clare Cup, which is the county league, separate competition completely to the championship. But it wouldn't keep lads home from Boston, like, you know.
No.
When the championship come back, lads, they say, that should be September. I'll be back the end of August, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's a long way from being solved. But the only thing I think with the split season is they'll be saying to the club, Clare, well, from the end of July, we can tell you for definite whether Kilkenny are in the final, All-Ireland final or not. You'll have all that time ahead of you. You'll have good hurling time in August. It's a great month, obviously, early September. I mean, that's the stab we're making at it now. Obviously, this year, COVID has tied our hands. I didn't believe it should have with the inter-county teams. I thought the league could have been played as normal and we'd have things up and running. But it's a hard one to solve, lads. But, Mark, you were on about that you've seen things in the lockdown now that's kind of showed you that there's more to life. And yet we see videos and pictures of 9 Dublin fellas above in Inish Fales training at 6 o'clock in the morning and Benty McEnany with 40 fellas around him above in Monaghan.
Well,
they're meant to come back.
Look,
and that's supposed to be.
And you know what, the other funny thing is, I'd actually make a little bit of a split opinion on the difference between Dublin and Monaghan. Like, I gave Dublin kind of the opportunity, I suppose, because the pictures only just showed 4 fellas having a kick around and having a mess around with a ball and stuff like that. I'm led to believe there was probably 9 fellas there, and I don't know whether there was a training session going on or was it just a kick around amongst 9 fellas that were living locally. But when I saw the picture on the Independent yesterday of the Monaghan team training and tripods and iPads and, you know, coaches in each section and 3 or 4 pods of players, they were having a full-scale training session, which I think is an absolute disgrace, I will say, in the eyes of the pandemic that's there at the moment. And this is not a Holland thing. This is a pure GA thing. I think that really flies in the face of what the government have tried to do and what this country has been faced with. And I'd be honest with it, I would have no issue in kicking them out of the championship immediately. Don't mind just suspension. They should be suspended for the championship for the rest of the year. And I tell you this much, they should also get about a 10 or a 20 grand fine as well along with it. And find somebody to actually pay it for them, because, you know, it was a full-scale training session, Anthony. That's what I have a problem with. I'm not like, the Dubs are brilliant, right? They're brilliant. They've been brilliant ambassadors for GAA. It looked like a kick around, right? So you have to delve down a little bit deeper, whether that was a training session or an official.
There was a coach there as well, Mark.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, look. I can only see what I saw yesterday, and like, that picture painted 1,000 words in my opinion. 10 or 15 cars lined out. Guys had come to do a training session, Anthony. And look, I have no issue. There's a couple of lads below on the field having a few pucks around, and they're doing a few runs for themselves and stuff. They're upsetting nobody, right? But when you have a county having a full training session when they know they're not supposed to, it's just not acceptable. End of story.
No sitting on the fence there, TJ.
There'll be no
7 in a row for the Dubs anyway. If McLanders was in Crow Park in High
Office. I said to you at the start, I have a different opinion on both of them, because I do believe the Dubs only, because it might be not just a kick around and stuff like that. But the Monaghan stuff was definitely a training session.
And I would say I'd nearly be the other way, because I'd say there's ferocious pressure on Monaghan. As I'd say, if you're thinking about who might be chancing, doing a bit of training, it could be nearer to Monaghan. Now, the Dubs, for me, like, they don't have anyone to beat in Leinster, basically. If you look back over results and Desi, the pressure's kind of off him now this year, because he came in and delivered on the back of Jim Gavin last year. I was more put out by that, I thought, anyway. What do you think, Teach?
I'm definitely not as strong as Mark in this, right? A couple of things for me is, first of all, the Informer is definitely alive and well in this country anyway, isn't he? Like, he's probably nearly as relevant now as he was 100 years ago. Huh?
Now he has phones. Now he's phones as well, and drones.
Phones and drones. There's an awful lot worse things happening in the world at the moment than a couple of lads getting together and training. They say that for sure. Is it wrong? It is from the point of view of the GEA when they say they don't want any collective training and some people play by the rules and some people don't. But we've had a little bit of that already with April supposed to be in a blanket month and some guys followed it and some guys didn't. It's a very tricky one for the GEA to police. Where do I stand in it personally? They shouldn't be training. But kicking teams out of the championship, I certainly wouldn't be for that. Getting suspended. I'd say Desi and Dubs were quick to move here to suspend Desi for 12 weeks in case they were down the road going after the players or something. You know what I mean?
I think the GAA have overrided that now.
But come here to me. All Dublin GAA did was try to lance the boil and take the news out of the story because it was going to drum on in the papers day in, day out. So the fact that they suspended Desi straight away, it bust the bubble on the Dublin scenario. And like, to be fair to the GAA, they were dead right to say, sorry, lads, that might be your decision. It's nothing at all to do with it. We'll be making the decision what happens with Desi Fell like.
Yeah, look, they shouldn't be training. The rule is made, they shouldn't be training. You can't get away from that. But in terms of what exactly you do, the jury's out for me.
Yeah. Hoagie, have you done much down there? Have you heard that the lads are doing much in the Centre of Excellence at Bryan?
Lord,
no one gets any news out of Kilkenny, like you're not
going to get anything out of me because I don't know anything, to be honest.
No informers in Kilkenny, is there?
No, how do you get that? No,
the raw shot, TJ.
I believe it.
I know the boys, you know, they're training away. I see one or two of them on the roads running and that kind of thing. That's about as much of I have, you know, the Castle Park there. I was in one day with the two kids and I saw one of the boys powering through there. So that's about as much as I'm aware of. You know, I have no doubt they're flaking and they have their personal programs to be doing and all that kind of stuff. If Ireland's a small place, Kilkenny's a very small place, you know, so there's not too many places to be hiding. But I listened to the boys there. I mean, the issue I would have had with it is, you know, front page news, you know, on the indoor, breaking a ban, you know, if they put as much effort into investigating and reporting on the JV scandal as they had on the Dublin training, we might be in as bad a spot as we are, you know. You know, an easy clickbait, you know. Now, they were completely wrong and they shouldn't have done it, both sides, you know. And again, the rules are the rules, but sure, look, you know, I will bend them here, we'll bend them there, and it doesn't make it right. But that part of it annoyed me, like, you know, on the front, not just front page of the sports, like, you know, front page of the news, you know, and they knew, you know, they'll get plenty of kickback, particularly when it was Dublin as well, you know. But when everything else that was going on, you know, no one challenging, you know, the numbers, you know, and effort and the way we're approaching things and the whole. Anyway, but that was my thoughts on it. But down here in Kilkenny, you know, we're all abiding by the law. We're very law abiding citizens.
On the hurling ball.
There you have it.
And you know,
from a hurling perspective, Dalo, it's great from, you know, that the county boards or the managements and the players involved in the counties at the moment are certainly seen to be, you know, abiding by the rules that are actually there. Like, you know, I mean,
yeah.
Do the football side of the GAA think that they can go away and flaunt the rules? You know, and are we just slacking behind? Like, but I'm very strong in it. I have no problem in being very strong in it because our country and the whole world has been shut down because of this coronavirus, and yet we have a number of counties who think that they're above the coronavirus. And you know, thankfully, nobody in my family. I've lost no relative close to me. I've had. A number of close family members who've had the COVID, and thankfully there has been no ramifications because of that, other than that they were sick and stuff for that. But I can tell you this much, what they have done, you know, I think has given the two fingers, and it has tainted the GAA in a very, very bad light. And you defended the elite status yesterday, and maybe that is why the government lost and the GAA did lose its elite status, is because of what this culture is there amongst the football fraternity, I will say, is exactly why maybe we lost the elite status. And if you want to turn it back to, you know, racing for a second, the pint of pints and the coursing was shut down in January and February, TJ, as you would know. And one of the main reasons was because they couldn't police it properly. And the bigger picture was that your, you know, the flat season and the national hunt season and inside the rails could go ahead because they couldn't be 100% certain that it could be policed. And I think this is exactly why NPHET or maybe the government made a decision that the GAA should lose its elite status. And you look, the county finals last year, you know, and what happened after was probably a determining factor in that. And I would agree with you, Anthony, when you said, look, counties that haven't won it for 25 years, emotion does come into it because it is very, very emotive to win in a county final. But I tell you this much, what Monaghan in particular, in my opinion, because it was a full training session, right, that is totally out of order. And they need to be dealt with.
That picture definitely true, it is.
I don't believe everything
I see in the papers or read or like on social media.
Well, sir, the Monaghan County Board came out, suspended Benty straight away. So TJ, so it has to be true then, like, you know,
The only thing I'll say, Mark, is the conflicting stuff, and I'm with Brian here, right, and I'm not a doctor or a scientist, and at this stage doesn't look like it will be. Never know, but my young fella Cormac is in second year. He went back to school today, right? So they're in a classroom of 26 or 7 or 8, right? So he's back in the classroom today, which is great. Thank God, right, since December. But underage, we can't go training in the field out in 5 acres tonight. We have another couple of weeks, right? Like, if the 9 lads from Dublin went to the Dundrum Shopping Centre, we're 2 metres apart and kicked the ball around, it'll be fine. So I have a certain degree of sympathy. Like, I am lucky I live out in the sticks, out in the rural part of the country, where we can go and have as much open air as we want, right? There are people who are living in confined spaces. And you have to remember too, right, these guys are like physical athletes at the peak of their powers, want to be ready. And like anybody who knows, like it is difficult enough to get ready in 2 to 3 weeks, like for league and to get ready. And this is going to come around quick, right? So in the overall scheme of things and what's going on in the country, for me, this is definitely not front page news. And it's definitely not as big a story as we made out to be.
I think
maybe the issue Mark has is just the fact it was so blatant in that it wasn't like 7 or 8 of the lads, it was the whole squad and the man, you know, is that maybe the location, you know, where they are positioned, you know, and the fact that the north is opening up quicker than the south, and there was a fear there. But like, the easy way around it is a financial penalty. You know, if it's severe enough, they won't risk it, you know, and not like there's no point fining Monaghan the same as Dublin. You know, if it's a percentage of your revenue for last year, 10% of Dublin's revenue is a hell of a lot higher than, you know.
You stop Hoggy Landers has been telling us every time we're on the amount of money that's been saved in the country. There's loads of money, Monaghan, I tell you. But I've been nearly in Mark's camp on it. Like, it's unprecedented. This is not like trying to get a fella off with a red card on video evidence or that. This is unprecedented times. I have a pub below alongside me here that's closed. If there was a fellow up the road in Curraclare letting people in the back door, would I think that was okay? I wouldn't, like, innit? You know, I spoke to Brian Lohan last week and I said, don't tell me there's any news going to come out or pictures. And Lohan just said, no, I'm not a hope. He said, like, you couldn't. He said, like, yeah, that was the shocking bit that the two counties involved, high profile Division One teams as well, like, the team going for seven in a row.
And Anthony, the thing about it is, like, if everybody's on the same page and everybody's been treated the same and everybody is doing the same, then you don't have an issue with it. But then when you find out that other crowds are training, it's not good. I'm not so sure.
I would have said maybe turn them out of the championship, but we've agreed already that the league is a bit lesser, and obviously this year it's lesser more. I would have nearly gone as far as saying, lad, you're out of the National League. You can organise a few challenge matches there for yourselves. You can play in the Ulster Championship, Benty, fair enough. And Dublin can play in Leinster. I would have thought, like, you know, we're hearing that there's loads of crowds at it, but we've no evidence of that. Like, so look, we could be pandering here. Look, we've enough. We're up to the hour and a half again. Larry, be like a dog. So, lads, we better wrap it. Hoggy, great to have you.
Pleasure.
We'll look forward to having you later on in the year. Lads, we did it 2 weeks ago. We did a whole pile on the rules there. TJ, you're calling me attention there? Yes?
Just 1 second. We listened to Mr. Roy Keane yesterday, Dello, speaking about Spurs, saying that you've been soft for the last 40 years. Did you hear those statements? Yeah.
I don't really like that fella, to be honest with you. He knows it all. Yeah, he knows. He never did anything wrong in his life. Like, and he knows about international football. He knows about club football. Funny enough, he was manager of a couple of places. It didn't go great for him. So I leave it at that. I don't get into a debate about him anymore. I did back in 2002 quite a bit. So I don't go down that way. But on rules and everything.
How did the game end up there, huh? Did you lose it?
Beaten 3-1, but
Right.
Yeah, we beat you 6-1 early on the year, so don't be talking about it. It's 7-4.
We're in second position now, like, you know.
Yeah, but your ride doesn't count that, sir, unless you're the winner, you're no good.
I disagree with him there, like, but a step in the right direction. What's his
favourite one that he says, Keane?
Prepare to fail.
No. He's one that he does all the time in the studio, and we all have our little traits. So he says, don't talk to me or something like that. What he says one thing like that, and we'll get plenty of it off the Twitter boys later on.
You were on about the rules just before you finish up the rules.
Yeah, well, look, we I think some of the stuff we had about the inside the 20-meter line was definitely a red card and a penalty and. Great ref, Johnny Ryan. Johnny sent me a text when he was out walking. He was listening to his Dale. You were off the map there on some of the chat. So hopefully in 2 weeks' time, we're hoping that Ferglaghan might be able to join us, All Ireland referee, obviously, and put us right. Anyway, I think we did the gist of it right, but we hadn't really defined it. And I won't be arguing with the referees anyway. We can ask them plenty of questions though. So look, that's great stuff as usual. Great chat. Bit of everything. Bit of golf, bit of soccer, bit of rugby, even Landers. How you got rugby into this show? But look, just to wrap up, my great pal, I suppose my hero growing up, I want to wish him a happy birthday today, Mr. Johnny Callanan, 2-time All-Star from Clarecastle. And his book, and it's not a great time, Mark. Obviously, it's a great time for if you're a reader around now, you have more time. His autobiography is out there now, To Play, To Live. Great read, lads. I'd recommend it to anyone. So look, be safe, people. We kick it over now to Paul Rouse and Oisin and Eamon Fitzmaurice to sort out that it's football counties are at this train. It's not hurling counties for next Monday's show. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks' time. Great stuff.
Cheers, Dello.
A grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, then.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on, Mayo. You've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.